Hello, I'm Father Mitch Pacwa, and welcome to EWTN Live. We're bringing you guests from around the world. Virtually everyone has sympathy for the pain of infertility. And a May 2024 Pew poll indicated that more than two-thirds of Americans believe that they are in favor of in vitro fertilization. They think it's good and should be accessible to anyone who wants it. And of course, the gift of children and parenthood is at the heart of our existence. And the inability to have children is a sorrow that rips at the very fabric of our being. Our guest tonight is here to encourage everyone to look at the biological, ethical, moral, and spiritual concerns that are involved in vitro fertilization. She has a doctorate in chemistry from Penn, great university. She has master's degrees in theology and philosophy and continues studying philosophy, working toward a doctorate in it. She has had her own experiences of reproductive loss, so this is not something theoretical. She is an adjunct professor at Holy Apostles College and Seminary and at Seton Hall University. Her new book is called IVF is Not the Way, The False Promises of Artificial Procreation. So please welcome Dr. Stacy Trisankos, all the way from the Republic of Texas. How do you do, Dr. Trisankos? Good
Thank
to have you here with us. Thank you very much.
Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. And just to make sure that, you know, folks understand, your degree is in chemistry. It's mm-hmm. not that you're a medical doctor.
No
that's not your field.
Yeah.
But your approach is one at a more basic level of studying the chemistry involved, but also the ethical and theological issues, correct?
Yes, correct. I began studying biology in the beginning of my academic career, and I switched to chemistry because I wanted to know what was underneath biology. So mm-hmm. it taught me mm-hmm. to really ask the first principle kind of questions about things. But I come to this issue as a mother, too, a convert to Catholicism, someone who understands what it's like to live a life where you think the human person is just made up of atoms. Because I lived that literally before I became Catholic and learned about the body and rational soul united. I'd never heard anything like that before.
Nobody, did you have any religious background?
I grew up Baptist in Texas, but these kind of things weren't taught. I mean, we read the Bible a lot. I read the Bible 3 times during my childhood because my grandmother told me to.
Yeah.
And so I had a relationship with Jesus, but the teaching of the Catholic Church, especially about the human person, mm-hmm. body and rational soul, and what does it mean to be rational as opposed to not rational, that rich teaching floored me, and I've looked around ever since. You don't find the teaching about what it means to be human anywhere else but the Catholic Church.
This is one of the really important issues of how we approach this, because I think, I've had a guest on my show a number of times, Dr. Anthony Rizzi, who's mm-hmm. from over in Louisiana. And he's a physicist, but he talks about this issue a lot, that scientism breaks things down into these little component parts, but doesn't understand what it means to be human.
That was a huge cognitive dissonance for me before I became, it was part of why I became Catholic. I thought of everything as made up of atoms. And I held my own newborns thinking this is just atoms, and I didn't understand my own feeling for it. Like, I mean, because I'm a logical person, and you learn that in chemistry.
Yeah,
and
sure.
So I wasn't afraid to follow the logic where it went, and I saw clearly that there is a problem because I know my child, I would give my life for this newborn baby that I held in my arms twice. I had 2 children before I converted, and I couldn't explain it. And what I ended up doing, because when you're working on your PhD in chemistry, getting a job at DuPont, trying to build your life, you just don't want to think about the bigger questions.
Now, let me ask you this. Given that you worked at DuPont mm-hmm. and you worked in labs at the university and they had lots of chemicals for yeah. you to work, did you ever feel like you would have given your life for the storage
no.
room of
no.
chemicals?
No, and or not even for a tree, or which I studied photosynthesis, so I know how amazing it is what trees do.
Yeah.
And no, it was, you know, and so that's what I love about the Catholic teaching is everybody has these longings to know and be known, to love and be loved, and we understand that from the revelation of the Holy Trinity. But you don't find anywhere else out there where that kind of approach to the human person is mm-hmm. even discussed or worked out. Mm-hmm. And I'm serious, nowhere else. You'll hear people talk about the soul. I have Catholic students still, and they still don't fully understand what it means to say we are body and soul. Mm-hmm. So that word soul gets thrown around a lot and person gets thrown around a lot. But the church has very clear, very rich, very deep thinking on that. And that's one of the things that radically changed my life. It's why I was willing to say, I will accept everything the church teaches. I'm not going to pick and choose. If I don't understand something, I'm sure that there are answers for it. Mm. And there were.
Yeah. Well, that's basically been my approach too. I don't know everything there is to know about the church at all. You know, there's really a lot of richness. But I know that if I run up on a problem, pursuing the Catholic mm-hmm. line of thought will lead to seeing the bigger picture,
yes.
the purpose of things, and explanations that flow from it.
Mm-hmm. There's still mystery, and there's a point where you have to let go and say, this is as far as I can go with my reason. And then we have divine revelation, and there's a lot we know there. But it's so much more. I mean, I felt like I was swimming around in the ocean. I'm not going to see the entire ocean, but thank God I get to do this. You know, I get to learn these things. So I have great appreciation and reverence for the teaching of the Catholic Church. That's why I went on to pursue those degrees. I figured that was the best way to learn as much as I could about what the church
sure.
teaches.
Because ultimately, there is this search to understand the whole mm-hmm. of reality, the whole of mm-hmm. the human person. And these are questions that are not able to be seen under a microscope or a telescope.
Nope.
You have to look, not like Stalin. Oh, that we flew out to space, we didn't see God.
No, yeah.
Thank you for playing, but you lose. Now, yeah. In terms of this question mm-hmm. that you are studying, using your expertise in chemistry, mm-hmm. How does this all apply to IVF, this larger picture, what it means to be human mm-hmm. and the actual physical elements as well?
It's a huge question, is one thing. That's why mm-hmm. I'm glad that we are having the conversation about IVF now because of the president's executive order. I think that was a blessing in disguise, actually.
Mm-hmm.
Because once you understand body and rational soul, there's a logical progression there all the way to procreation. It all fits together. The body and rational soul, that's where our dignity comes from. We have human dignity as opposed to the bag of chemicals dignity. We have our own human dignity right. because we're made in the image and likeness of God.
As a matter of fact, if I just may yeah. add too, the bag of chemicals is oftentimes the basis for people saying you don't have dignity
exactly.
and we can cut you to pieces yes. in the womb.
Yes, yes.
It doesn't add to our understanding. Body and soul
yes.
does.
Yes. Bag of Adams approach has no more. You can't claim morality when you look at the world
yeah.
that way. And that was clear to me. But when we have the human dignity as body and soul, then you can understand why when you have marriage, the most intimate bond that we say two become one. Mm-hmm. You can't separate body and soul in each person. The marriage itself has to be spiritual and physical. And the church's teaching comes from that. So a lot of people come to IVF and they're thinking about embryos and freezers, which is a serious thing. But that's not the main reason the church says it's wrong. That's a consequence of not following the church's teaching in the first place. the main reason it's wrong is because it separates that unity of body and soul, physical and spiritual, in the marriage. Mm. And like contraception shuts down the life-giving part of lovemaking and life-giving, IVF shuts down the lovemaking part.
One of the things that I think is important, that when someone is using contraception, they're saying, I'll give you all myself, mm-hmm. except my fertility.
Yes.
That's mine.
Yeah.
I don't want to share that.
Mm-hmm.
And then, as you say, with IVF, you shut down the actual union between a man and a woman anyway.
To bring the child into existence, you turn that part over to the lab. And the church is consistent here, and that's the part I don't think a lot of people realize. The church isn't saying, no, you can't use that medical technology to make a baby. You know, it's not the church being anti-science or anything like that. It's the church being very pro-human and fundamentally very pro-child.
Mm-hmm.
And they're saying that a child has a right to be brought into existence in cooperation with God in the unity of bodily and spiritual marriage.
Yeah.
That kind of love.
In other words, the existence of a child is not simply some scientific process.
Yes.
It's a set of relationships, mm-hmm. that between two people that becomes three, sometimes more.
Yes.
This is the relational aspect, because it comes from one's relationship with God to
yes.
begin with.
That's the right order of things. And that was one of the things, you know, because I used contraception before I became Catholic, because I didn't know, I had no clue that it was even wrong. And that's what everybody did.
Right.
Back in the 80s and 90s. And once I understood that, I was like, okay. And my thanks be to God, my husband and I went on to have 5 more children after we got married. I already had 2. But we also lost 5 in miscarriage.
Mm-hmm.
And it was because of the church's teaching. A, I knew my body well enough to know those little trisankosis even existed, because I might have missed it. It was early miscarriage.
Mm-hmm.
But B, it allowed us to love them like our children, because they are. And we were able to say, we're not going to get to raise this child. We're not going to get to hold these children, but they're ours. They're little trisankosis. We celebrate them. We love them. And we have hope that we will see them in eternity. And so that's a radically different approach to parenthood than, I mean, we had to let go of them sooner, but I have children now who are in their 20s and 30s. You have to let go of them too. Every day is an exercise in letting go.
Mm-hmm.
And so that is such a beautiful teaching with your marriage, with who you are as a person, and with your love for your children. Like, it all fits together. It's not free of pain and suffering, but it's mm-hmm. full of hope.
Another aspect of that letting go of children is that parents who try to make their children an extension of themselves,
yes.
to live out their own dreams through their children,
yes.
are making huge mistakes, mostly founded in their own self-centeredness.
Yes, or wounds.
Rather than realizing, no, this is not a sack of chemicals.
Yeah.
It's not just a little bunch of bonded atoms or molecules. It is a real person who will be called by God to mm-hmm. do what God wants them, and they may or may not listen
right.
to me or God.
Or God,
I mean, it's, again, relationships mm-hmm. of real persons.
It is. And it's beautiful. It's scary. I mean, I'm navigating life with my 20 and 30 year olds, and I had 4 teenage daughters at once.
Oh, bless you.
But it's a beautiful way to go through life, and it's so much. I mean, when I just thought everything was made of atoms, I just checked out. I felt like I checked out on life for the most part, because I didn't understand how to do any of those things. And you do end up using your children vicariously in an objective way as objects, instead of as this little person who God gave you in a relationship to get to know. And I can tell you, when you think that everything is made up of atoms, you are not capable of having healthy relationships.
Have you thought about why that is?
Yeah, long and hard.
Yeah.
Because I had to heal from that. And I still am affected by materialism to a great extent because I still have to fight that thinking. Mm-hmm. But you become a control freak, as they say. I mean, chemists control atoms. And if you're just atoms, I'm going to try to control you to get you to do what I want you to do because that's how I'm trained. Even in a relationship. And so I really had, that was one of my conversion moments. I had broken all the relationships in my life. I didn't have friends. I didn't have people close to me. I didn't know how to be close to someone. Mm-hmm. And I have a real heart for the culture there because the good news is, you know, in the Catholic Church, we do have guidelines for how to have relationships and be happy. Yeah. I just think that out there in culture, IVF and all the other things, people just don't know this message.
As you were saying that, you know, how a materialistic worldview, made relationships so difficult and mm-hmm. impossible and made you more controlling.
Yes.
I couldn't help but get a picture, not a view in this way, but of Joseph Stalin.
Yeah.
You know, the radical materialistic mm-hmm. view of existence.
Yes.
That is inherent in Marxist thought. Mm-hmm. Treated humans as just
things.
Yep. And that they were useful idiots mm-hmm. for the purpose of the revolution, or they helped the revolution until I thought they didn't.
Yep.
And so, it was eliminating people, controlling people, mm-hmm. trying to control. And, you know, it's interesting to have someone who had a more materialistic mm-hmm. viewpoint also say that's just part of materialistic thinking.
It is, and I blame atomism. I mean, I don't want to get off the topic, but that is what I have devoted my life to because I understand.
What do you mean by this?
Everything's made up of atoms.
Okay.
And that's really, all that stuff can be tied to it. I think that is the root of what's wrong in society. And I also know that children are taught in chemistry class or physical science class, everything's made of atoms, even in Catholic institutions, because that's how chemistry is taught. And it does not prepare them to hear we're body and rational soul. And so in the time I have left that God grants me, I am working on that problem because it's underneath all of these bioethical issues.
Mm-hmm. So I think that's right.
And IVF is just one example of this.
Yes. Now, as this applies to IVF, so mm-hmm. it's important for us, I think, to take a look at this basic issue.
Yes.
You know, if we don't understand the basic issue, then all we'll hear is, well, the church said that's bad.
Exactly.
And it's not that the church is just, we don't like it, and we were mad at Galileo too. And no, that's not it at all, is it? No, it's not about the church just saying no to science.
Exactly.
It's another issue and it's understanding that bigger picture. Let's go into some of the more detailed aspects mm-hmm. of what is the problem with IVF.
Well, the problem with IVF was back in 1978 when the first IVF baby was born, the church mm-hmm. had already been saying you shouldn't do this for nearly 100 years. Mm-hmm. The first non licere pronouncement was from Pope Leo XIII back in 1897 when someone asked, can we apply artificial insemination to humans? So they did that with livestock already. You
right.
take the gametes, the egg and the sperm, and put them together in the lab because you want to control the genetics
right.
of the livestock breeding. And someone said, can't we do this with humans? Long before it reached medical viability, the church said, no, you can't treat humans like animals.
Right.
And clearly, definitively, there was no if, and, or but about it. But then it happened in 1978. 4 years later, there were 40 IVF babies. By 2024, there were 10 to 12 million IVF babies in the world that were born from IVF. Mm-hmm. But what the other thing is, those are the ones that were born. there's even more embryos in freezers. In the United States alone, what I discovered when I was doing my research, 1 to 10 million embryos in cryogenic storage in the United States alone. And so people say, why 1 million to 10 million? That's such a big range. It's because we keep better records of livestock than we do our human children.
Is that right?
And we don't know, nobody knows exactly how many embryos are in freezers. And that's what really gets me, because people said to me, well, you have 7 children, you don't need to be talking about IVF and infertility. Well, I lost 5 children too. But I live in this country, and I don't want to live in a country where we put embryos that nobody wants to raise in a freezer. I have a say. We all have a seat at this table, because we don't stand for treating children this way. And, you know, why does that happen? People go for IVF. It's very expensive. It's very painful. So they get as many eggs from the woman as they can, abnormally. It's not good for the woman. They fertilize as many as they can because it's so expensive. So they just fertilize them while they can. And then if you've got 8 fertilized embryos, but you only want 1 baby, then you have the decision what to do with the other 7.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why there are so many in freezers, because people don't want to just discard them, because they know that's their child. And so they put them in the freezer, and now we have this issue. There are over 100 lawsuits because freezers were accidentally unplugged, and the children that were being guarded in the freezers were thawed and died. And so now there's lawsuits about that.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a mess. And it's not getting better.
I remember back in the 80s, I lived in Tennessee. And there was a case where a couple had their embryos frozen. They were both killed in a car wreck.
Mm.
And they were fairly wealthy. And the legal question was, do their embryos inherit their wealth, or will the state take it? Well, you can see what the state was.
Mm-hmm.
They wanted, they like other people's money all the time.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, what a conundrum. And then, of course, there were the 2 sets of grandparents.
Yeah.
Who were arguing over this. And then who would carry the legal problems that arise
abundant.
From this are
yes.
still developing.
We're living the experiment, the nightmare now. It's every day you hear things like this. There was a story recently about, I think it was in the New York Times, a woman and her husband had the embryos, and this woman was into her 60s and she still wanted more kids. So she had like 12 or 13. And because of the embryos, she would go back. She forged her husband's signature to have the last 2 embryos implanted, and she gave birth to them in her 60s. And then her husband sued her because she forged his signature. And so by the time these little children were age 2, they were in foster care because the mom and father were fighting over whether they should have done that or not. So it's just, when you don't fundamentally understand that those children need to be born in the love of marriage, body and soul, in cooperation with God, so many things can go wrong. And it's not just IVF. Anytime we break that order, things can go wrong.
Well, there's one other element that goes on with IVF. When people will test the DNA of the child.
There's that.
And then they find out, well, I don't want a boy,
mm-hmm.
or I don't want a girl. Usually they don't want boys. Or this one has the high risk of cancer.
Yeah.
This one is, has Down syndrome. And what do?
They just don't, they get rid of them.
They destroy them.
Yep.
Or one could say, since they're alive,
mm-hmm.
they kill them.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's the flat reality.
Yeah,
that where a mother carrying a child is mm-hmm. not likely to do that.
Mm-mm.
You know, there are some, but again, it's going back to the mentality. Well, it's a series of chemicals
mm-hmm.
And DNA, and you know that yeah. that's the, oh no, we don't like that DNA. that's also taking this out of the relationship.
Yes. It's you're not being open to who that child is. And there are already issues with children because this started in 1978. So we have 40-year-olds who were born by IVF, 20, 30-year-olds, 20-year-olds. When I give talks on college campuses, there's always students in the audience who were born that way. Mm-hmm. And they have to, it's hard for them to hear the church says that's wrong because, of course, we know this. The church is not saying there's anything wrong with those children.
Does the church say they are less than human?
Of course not. No, the church, that was never what it was about. But these young adults also have to face the fact that they have siblings still in a freezer, some of them, and they're going to ask questions like, why me and not that other embryo? Why was I born and not that one? It just creates problems. There was a story of a woman who She found out later in life through a genetic test that her father wasn't even her biological father. The doctor had used his own gametes, his own sperm, and she had almost married her half-brother, not knowingly, because in the community that had happened so much. So it's just like the amount, I stopped following every single bad story because people would send them to me after I wrote the book.
Look to you.
It's wrong. It's just wrong. Yeah. You know, like I can't keep up with it because yes, these things are going to happen. But here's what we as Catholics need to get our head around, not in a despairing way, in a hopeful way. We haven't seen the worst of it yet. It's ongoing. Our president supports it. Medical community supports it. I heard last week that Costco now offers IVF.
Costco?
Yes. At Holy Apostles, where I teach, the bioethics instructor there let me and the dean know because we needed to be aware of this for our children, for our students. You can go to Costco now and get, you know, they'll send you to their clinic, but you can go to Costco to get it done. So it's becoming more common.
And I would add, it's become more commercial.
Yes, yes.
And that's one of the issues that's going on here, is we're dealing with a commercialization of it.
Yes.
That is,
it's business.
Is it a lucrative
it
business?
It is. The pharmaceutical drugs themselves are lucrative because the woman, what the drugs, the hormone treatments do for the woman is they put her into premature menopause, which is horrible. It's very rough on her body. It's hard enough naturally, but they put the woman into premature menopause to stop her ovaries from producing eggs. And then they give her another hormone to hyperstimulate the ovaries to produce more eggs than she's supposed to. So there's bloating, sleeplessness, pain, illness, and who knows what the long-term effects are, just to get the eggs out. And even women who don't do IVF, but they're egg donors because they get paid to do that, they're wrecking their bodies with these unnatural things.
I don't think any of us men understand what it's like to be a woman, and vice versa.
And vice versa.
And vice versa.
It's hard being alive.
There's a radical difference mm-hmm. and mystery about, what it means to be womanly mm-hmm. and what it means mm-hmm. to be manly. Which is a good thing.
It is a good thing. It's a blessing.
I often wonder when people say, "Well, I feel like a woman." I really don't think you do. You can empathize a lot, but there's still. But it sounds to me, as someone who's outside a woman's mm-hmm. system, that the people who think chemically are also creating an internal war in a woman's reproductive system. And it sounds like it's battling opposite forces to stop production of eggs, now overproduce.
Yeah.
It's like Simon Says.
I have concerns, and I don't think anybody really knows what the long-term effects of that are on the woman. It's like contraception. Back in the 70s and 80s when everybody was using it, including myself, we didn't know what the risks were for doing that. And, I live with that now. It's been decades, since I've been Catholic and stopped, but I don't know what it did. Mm-hmm. I just know I wasn't fertile during certain years of my life mm-hmm. because of artificial contraception.
Yeah.
I also want to speak to infertility because there are people I interviewed for the book who did everything as close to the church's teaching as they could. Like they're the kind of people who are trying. And if this is what the church teaches, they're like me. They'll figure it out as time goes by, but they're not going to question it. And they are infertile and they don't understand what they're supposed to do. And I get that. I have 7 children, but that doesn't mean that I have an easy life either. I mean, there's all kinds of loss that comes with that. I saw my daughter hold her son in her arms when he died as a premature baby. So, I mean, there's all kinds of things that happen.
Yeah.
And fundamentally, whether you're infertile or whether you're navigating life, whatever is thrown at you, the point of being a Christian, of practicing the Catholic faith, of returning to the sacraments, is that you don't control everything and you can't control everything, and you accept what comes and you see the blessing in it, even when there's pain and suffering. And so I've had to learn that with my older children and just in my life, but that's where adoption comes in. And I don't want to say that if you're infertile, you should adopt. I want to be very careful about that, because you have to be called to adopt. Mm-hmm. That has to be a vocation the Holy Spirit calls you to, but as long as there are children already walking around on this planet without the love they deserve, who don't have a family, I don't see how there could be any justification for going and using IVF just because you want your own genetic child.
Yeah. We need to take a break right now. I'd like to come back at that point and take a look at that.
Okay.
Because that's an important issue. If you want to find out more about Dr. Trisanko's work, you can go to stacytrisanko.substack.com and find out more about this. But we'll come back in just a couple of minutes and continue this discussion, so please stay with us. Welcome back. We are speaking to Dr. Stacy Trisankos, and her book is called IVF is Not the Way, The False Promises of Artificial Procreation. And it is item number 7987. You can get it at ewtnrc.com. And take a look and study this. It's a very important issue. And as you mentioned, President Trump mm-hmm. has been a big supporter and has given executive orders in favor of in vitro fertilization. And he's doing it, out of empathy for people who can't have kids, mm-hmm. And they'd like to have their own child. And so it's not malice on his part mm-hmm. or on the part of many Christians who are very supportive of it.
Yes.
They see this as being very pro-life. They talk about it in public as very pro-life. Mm-hmm. But it's only because it's in favor of live babies rather than killing babies.
Yeah.
It's still problematic.
Yes.
And morally, and I think you're talking about in the first part that you need that overview of mm-hmm. what is a human being. And I think in a lot of the churches that use scripture alone, the Bible alone, they don't see anything in the Bible that prohibits it. And so they say, well, then it's okay. And that's not enough of a way to think about this. And the questions about what is it to be a human being made in the image and likeness of God is what is at stake here. And avoiding a scientist approach that breaks everybody down into chemicals, atoms, and various scientific processes or forces. There's something beyond all that that other people miss.
They do. And it's frustrating because the learning is there. The teaching of the Catholic Church is there. But it just doesn't get promulgated out to the culture. And that's, so when I wrote the book, I've been told the book is a little bit heady, and I certainly didn't mean it that way, but I am very left-brained myself. I want to see the logical steps.
By left-brained, is that a political statement?
No.
Oh, okay.
No, I like things to be in a logical order, and so the whole book is not just argument, logic. It's got some real life in it about the embryos, people who I interviewed and their stories. But the first part of the book also has a 10-step logical argument, because you have to get through 10 steps to get from God created everything to IVF is not the way. And I walk through it, and I really encourage Catholics to be patient and walk through that and learn it. Because it won't just give you tools for talking about IVF and culture. It'll give you tools for talking about the dignity of life, whether it's beginning of life or end of life. But it will also give you tools in navigating your own life and your own relationships. And I wanted to bring all of that into the IVF argument because I didn't know how to start somewhere in the middle with saying marriage. If you start with marriage, then people are going to say, well, that's what the Catholics believe about marriage. Well, there's a reason for that. And it's frustrating to me because I want people to know this teaching. I'm a teacher. I'm an instructor. I've been doing that in some form or another all my adult life. And it's such a beautiful thing to understand. And that we're human, body and rational soul, and we have intellect and free will, and we're responsible for our choices, and we're freer when we make good choices, all of that. The moral reasoning in the church about how things are objectively wrong or not always objectively wrong, but intent matters, like there's clear teaching on all of that. And I lay it out in the book. I wrote the book so that people would have it in their hand, what the church teaching is in an accessible way, to get out there and do this, talk. That's the only way we're going to change hearts and minds, is to engage with people, talk with people, explain things to people, start anywhere in the 10 sequence steps of the argument you need to, but know the full argument when you're talking to someone. We have an obligation to know what the church teaches.
And this is something that I think has applied to the question of abortion. It's not enough to change the Roe v. Wade decision and to eliminate that. That's just talking about the Supreme Court having at one point decriminalized abortion. It didn't really make it legal, it just decriminalized it. That didn't change people's hearts and minds as to whether this is a lump of cells or is a human person. That, and that has to come by other changes, conversions toward understanding that the scientism that breaks everything down into the tiniest component parts is got a certain role, but it is not at all the purpose. You know, it's important to study chemistry.
Yes, very.
But however, it is not what makes a human person. And it's not the whole of reality. It's not the relationship of creation with God.
Yes.
So this is something that is very important, that conversion of hearts. How do we proceed toward that? And I would wonder, too, that one part of my question is, if this were changed, say another president rescinds the executive order, does that change anybody's hearts?
It's going to have an influence on the culture. I mean, things are going to roll out and keep going as the years go by. But it's always about one-on-one. I mean, it was a fundraiser, a Catholic fundraiser told me this, but I think it applies to evangelization. Look at every other person you meet with a question mark over their head. So not in terms of what you can raise from them, but what does God want you to do? Why am I even in this person's life? Why did God put this person in front of me? And that has been part of my own healing from materialism is seeing every other person as someone, it's not my stage, I'm an actor on their stage. And understanding where this person is, I love to engage with atheists and people who don't believe because I want to. I want to, but we have to understand that atheists aren't just people who are all one label. They have their own experiences, their own pains, their own wounds, their own reasons for believing what they believe. And we have to show them that dignity and love. The same way we're talking about embryos in freezers and babies being born in marriage, they're a person too, and we have to engage. And for some people, they're like, no kidding, duh. That comes naturally to some people, but it did not come naturally for me. It's very hard for me to bond where it's not electrons orbiting the nucleus, it's actually souls uniting. It's very hard for me to still think that way. And I'm a mother of seven, so I have to do that. And
with more coming.
Yeah, with seven grandchildren. So it's just been a real blessing, though, because that's where the beauty of the Holy Spirit and becoming, this whole becoming thing happens, is when you're in this relationship, things bud and sprout and grow from that kind of love when two are gathered. And there's a lot to be said about relationships, but our children are people that we have relationships with. Even from the first moment that they come to exist in the mother's womb, there's a person there, a journey has started, and your job as a parent is to love and support that child.
And any number of mothers have told me that, especially if they've had multiple children, that already they can feel differences about the way a child acts in a womb.
Yes.
You know, they're felt differences. You don't know them as personalities yet, but you start to detect, you know, differences, you know, fairly early on.
Yes. From the very beginning, and then watching who they become as they grow up. And it's a wonderful thing to be a parent. And, I have to be careful saying that because we're talking about infertility. That is what the people who are infertile and desperately want children, you know, good Catholics who think they might turn to IVF, that's what they want. They want to be that kind of parent. They want to know that kind of love.
Right.
It's painful not to have it. And that, all I can say to that is God doesn't give us everything we think. A child is a gift, okay? That's another thing I never heard except on Hallmark cards before I became Catholic. The child is a gift. You may not get a child as a gift, but that doesn't mean God forgot about you. It doesn't mean you're being punished. It means God's calling you to something else. I tell you a quick story. I dedicated the book to my aunt and uncle. Uncle Kenneth and Aunt Dana, Texans, live out in Abilene. And when my aunt, and they've been married for 60 plus years, in the very beginning of their marriage, all my aunt wanted to do was be a mother. That was her life as a teenager. She wanted to grow up and get married and have babies. The first baby that they got pregnant with, they lost it. And when they cleaned out the uterus, they punctured it and rendered her permanently, definitively infertile. And she took that pain, and they became foster parents out in West Texas. And they have fostered over 100 children in their marriage together. They adopted two beautiful children who are adults now, but they fostered over 100 children. And what happened is those children stayed, some of them stayed in touch. They grew up, they have their own families now, and every Christmas, Easter, birthdays, they're flooded with cards and gifts and pictures from these children that they loved when they didn't have anybody else to love them.
Yeah.
And in the Psalms, it says that grandchildren are the jewels of heaven. My mm-hmm. my aunt and uncle are going to have many jewels because yeah. that's just a story of what God can do with you.
And, you know, one of the things, too, there's so many unknowns about, you know, why a particular couple cannot conceive.
Yes.
We don't know.
We don't know.
And research is being done, mm-hmm. but there's also that inability may speak to something else mm-hmm. that is way beyond what we can understand right now. We may not understand why, you know. Mm-hmm. Would there be other difficulties mm-hmm. with the children if they were conceived? I mean, we don't know.
Yeah.
And so this is where we take a look at life and say, okay, this is not possible. Am I going to approach God and demand that I get yeah. the child I want?
Mm-hmm.
I want to have my own child. I don't want a foster child.
Exactly.
Or am I going to say, Lord, I'm taking Jesus seriously. Thy will be done
yes.
on earth as in heaven. And I'm here on earth and I'm seeking your will. What do I do? How do I respond to this? You know, and there are a lot of ways that people can respond to, you know, infertility.
Yeah.
And the problem is that IVF is one, but it leads to these other problems, including, you know, the rupture of the relationship mm-hmm. between a husband and yeah. wife, and sometimes problems for the children. I don't know if you've studied any of this. Are there difficulties, physical difficulties, that are a result of in yeah. vitro fertilization?
The USCCB has a document that I cite in the book about mm-hmm. where they've done some research. They just collected scientific research articles dealing with this. Part of it is what happens to the woman after undergoing the treatment. So they're starting to figure that out scientifically. But the other part of the USCCB document is about the babies. And there is a documented higher prevalence of genetic diseases and other problems with these babies. And they're genetic. They don't come from the genes they inherited. There's something that goes wrong in their genetic development mm-hmm. once they exist.
Mm-hmm. Because a baby does get its genes from its mother and father, mm-hmm. but it's its own reality
yes.
too. It's not just...
Those genes have to become expressed mm-hmm. over time. Mm-hmm. And one of the ladies I interviewed was a fertility care expert who gives talks and lessons to NICU nurses in the neonatal intensive care unit. And she said she was talking to them one time about fertility care, which is the church's teaching on how to deal with infertility. But the nurses all said to her, we would never personally use IVF in our life. They didn't even understand all the church's teaching, but they said we would never use IVF in our life to have our own babies, because as NICU nurses, we see what happens to the babies born by IVF. So they have a more statistical outlook. They see the trajectory.
Mm-hmm.
Those babies are born prematurely. They have problems. They have problems surviving. To the extent where just anecdotally these nurses collectively said, we would not do that for that reason alone.
As a matter of fact, one of my former students who's been on the network, Dr. Robin Pierucci, mm-hmm. is a neonatologist.
Okay.
She's semi-retired, but she retired, but she's still working. And she also, and her colleagues mm-hmm. in the neonate unit saw these problems show up, and only later did they do research to find out some of these problems were that the children who were born in vitro fertilization, IVF, were these kids mm-hmm. with the problems. So, and they also said, and so did a number of the parents she interviewed, mm-hmm. I would never do this to my child again.
Yeah.
And it's not that they're saying, I would never give up the loss of a child.
Yeah.
No, I wouldn't do this to my child, that this was something they found harmful to the children they love very much. So, but it has its own difficulties.
There's a lot we don't know.
Not always.
It. Yeah.
Not always.
Yeah.
But significant percentage.
Yes. And what's scary is, like, I keep getting back to that despairing message, but I don't want to leave people with despair. This isn't going away. We have to accept the fact that the medical community is going to keep pushing. You know, the church said 100 years ago, don't do it. They did it.
Yeah, of course.
They're going to keep going until they can create a fully viable human being in the lab. I'm convinced of that. I think it's coming, maybe not in our lifetimes, but maybe in our children's or grandchildren's lifetimes, because they can already grow an embryo for a couple of weeks in the lab. They have a 14-day rule. The longer they're able to grow an embryo in the lab, the more stable that biological life becomes. Mm-hmm. And they're going to reach a point where they can keep it alive in artificial wombs. Mm-hmm. And there will be a child someday announced that was completely grown in a lab. I firmly believe that. And I think we need to get ready for it, because sin is going to keep happening. We can't stop sin from happening, but it will be up to the Catholic voice in that future day to talk about love and what it means to be human and how everybody has inherent human dignity. I mean, we're going to have to keep professing the same truths.
I think it'd be worthwhile for people to consider this moral problem by rereading, if you have, if you already have, or reading mm-hmm. for the first time, Aldous Huxley's book, Brave New World, where this is the way that, mm-hmm. and it comes to a point where to say that you have a mother was to say something dirty about you. Yeah. That's where that moves. This is worth taking a look at that book.
Yep.
We read that back in high school, but it's was more prophetic.
Yeah, I don't want to read it again.
I know, but it's very important. And again, we want to assure, we only have a couple minutes left, about a minute and a half left, but we also want to assure people, the church does not disregard children who are born by in vitro, and nor do we. You know, these are human beings. We see them as body and soul, this whole person with inherent dignity. But this is something that we're saying not the way to go about it.
Yeah, I mean, the church says you shouldn't have children out of wedlock, because the child deserves that unity of mother and father. But that nobody says, well, a child born out of wedlock is somehow less. I mean, we don't think that. It's the same thing. We don't think that either.
I want to encourage you to take a look at this book by Dr. Trisankos. It's called IVF is Not the Way, The False Promises of Artificial Procreation. It's by our guest, Dr. Stacy Trisankos, PhD, and it's available at ewtnrc.com, where it is item number 7987. It would be well worth it to go and read that and think through this. This is a point where I think the president made a wrong decision morally. And also, you can find out more by going to stacytrisankos.substack.com and find out more about her work.
Thank you
for coming all the way from
Father.
The Republic of Texas. Good to have you here. And may the Lord bless all of you and keep you and cause His face to shine upon you and lead you in all of His ways by His peace. May Almighty God bless you, the Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit. Amen. We can bring these important discussions about very key moral issues in the church's teaching only because this whole network is brought to you by you. So please remember to keep us in between your gas bill, your electric bill, and your cable bill, and we'll be able to pay all of our bills too. God bless you all, and thank you.